Glowworm by Alison Greaves. Chapter 3. Cooper. If you draw a straight line on the map from Viv's place through the town centre and out to the wasteland of the old industrial estates inland, it would almost, but not quite, intersect Gemma's squat. So when Viv struggles out of the half-height window, dirt cascading around her as she scrabbles for purchase and stands, exhausted, wheezing like a smoker, blinking away the sunrise and wondering just how badly she hit her knee on the metal window frame, she's about as far from her flat as it's possible to be while still, technically, being in town. Worse, the buses don't come out this far anymore and the phone Viv stole turns out to be an iPod. So she walks, looking for Wi-Fi, a surviving business, or any signs of life at all that aren't currently snoozing on a stained armchair, sleeping off a busy evening of kidnapping. Hours later, with the sun now high in the sky, her progress slows. Whatever drugs that Gemma woman gave her chased away most of her everyday pain, but it returns as she walks, plucking at her nerves and fatiguing her muscles. Her thumb aches harder, her knee throbs where she bashed it, and Viv just wants to rest. She's far enough into town that the occasional active shopfront has started peering out from around its boarded-up neighbours, and Viv staggers into the first cafe she sees, masking up and flagging down a cup of tea and an egg sandwich. Within 5 minutes she's eaten her sandwich, made a good start on the tea, gotten the Wi-Fi password off the chalkboard, and installed Skype on the iPod. Who's this? It's Viv. Vivian! New phone? Matt's dim enough that he still answers calls from unknown numbers, thank God. It's a wonder he doesn't get scammed more often. No, don't save this number. New girlfriend's phone? No. New boyfriend's phone? Matt, I've had a really bad morning. My phone's smashed, it won't even start. I'm on the Skype account I use for Mum. Oh, sorry. Want me to get a new one off Yev? He's out back right now, you can pay me back. Please. Look, Matt, I need a lift. Sure. From where to where? Dumb, but helpful. He'll make a biddable husband for an extremely patient girl one day. From, Viv squints at the receipt. The Water Lily Cafe? In town? To my place?
When about? I'm on lunch in like 20 minutes.
Lunch? Did it really take her that long to walk a couple of miles? Viv checks the time on the iPod. Apparently so. That's fine. Thanks, Matt.
And hey, guess what?
What? Viv says, controlling the urge to sigh.
I'll be there in your car.
He hangs up before she can comment and swaggers through the door of the cafe 40 minutes later, swinging the keys around his finger like Viv's shitty Corsa is a raffle prize. He spends the journey to her place, telling her of his adventures tracking down the cause of the check engine light's malfeasance. Viv spends it downloading her cloud onto the replacement phone he left on the passenger seat. It's nicer than the old one. When pressed on how the evening went, she lies. Too much to drink, dropped her phone, slept on someone's couch, and come the morning they had to go to work, so she got turfed out into the caff down the road. He believes her, and why wouldn't he? It makes more sense than what Viv remembers. Matt cheerfully insists that he can get the bus back to work, and Viv's so grateful she doesn't complain when he gives her an entirely COVID-unsafe kiss on the cheek. She hugs him back, shoos him away with a smile and a wave, and falls asleep the moment her head touches the pillow. She wakes to the sound of breaking glass. You can't ever have enough knives, but it's possible to run out of places to strap them. Vivian Taylor's run off, because of course she has. She took the iPod too, as if she knew it was the one Gemma had with her last night, the one with the photos of the mangled human and Cooper's repeatedly stabbed body, so that's a double fuck you to Gemma's day. Now she has no evidence and no target, and still no idea why Cooper's accelerated his process. Something's got to have changed for him to get so brazen and careless, and Gemma feels stupid for being unable to figure it out. Stupid and scared. Whatever Helena likes to say about Gemma being a real vampire, there's no doubt she lives on sufferance. If things have changed enough that her extremely reluctant welcome is about to run out, she would rather like to have enough notice to gather some cash from various accounts and get the fuck out, or at least mentally prepare for having her head cut off. She curses Cooper, as she often does when she's stressed. Why did the fucker have to go and kill her in the first place? Sure, Gemma's life before she died wasn't exactly great, but... She's never known how to end that thought positively, and things now aren't really so different to things back then. Still lonely, still essentially homeless, still a monster, still clinging to one of the worst people she knows because she's the only one who still opens the door when Gemma knocks. At least Helena's upfront with her exploitation. Gemma hasn't been gaslit in 2 decades, and now she can kick through walls. Cooper's a bastard anyway. Fuck it. Gemma doesn't waste time scolding herself for sleeping and giving Vivian the opportunity to run away. Sure, in an ideal world she would have stayed awake to watch her, but in an ideal world she'd have access to enough real human blood that a handful of stabbings and a few acrobatic feats wouldn't have put her on her back for... She checks her phone. Jesus, 11 hours. Who the hell knows what Cooper, who doesn't have her restrictions, and who probably carries around a flask of human blood at all times like a flash wanker, could do in that time. Vivian might already be turning, might already be gone. Knife on each ankle, knife on each hip, knife on crossbody strap, spares in the bag, bright outside sunglasses on. She discovered when Helena woke her up on the first day as a vampire that sunlight doesn't kill her. She ran straight outside to die, but only got embarrassed. But the headache from prolonged exposure isn't pleasant. She learned later on her first assignment that the only way to kill a vampire is to sever the head from the body or do serious damage to the brain. Like a zombie, not a comforting comparison. One last look around the safe house to make sure she hasn't forgotten anything important, and Gemma hops up and out through the window. Foot traffic in this part of town is almost non-existent, and Vivian's scent lingers, but Gemma can only guess which way she went. Towards the town centre, probably, but probably doesn't find humans. There's no choice but to call Helena.
Sweetheart, tell me you have something.
Had something. Someone. Lost her.
Gemma, dear, what's happening?
I'll tell you later. Clock's ticking and I need an address. Vivian Taylor, human, lives in town, works at the big beachway down at the shopping centre. Mid-20s, I think. Cooper wants her, and he wants her bad. Bad enough to tear her almost to pieces in public, not long after sunset. It's Helena's audible gasp, more than anything she could have said, that reassures Gemma that nothing in the rules has changed enough to make Cooper's actions suddenly okay.
Did anyone see? Where was he?
Helena asks, the lilt gone from her voice. In an alleyway between 2 blocks of flats. I cleaned it up after, so it should just look like dirt now. But if someone walked past at the wrong moment and happened to look, they would have seen it all. I think we got lucky, though.
You have proof?
Photos of the aftermath. Nothing that'll stick.
Anyone sufficiently strong could have beaten up Cooper and destroyed Vivian and staged the photos, and the few she took from the roof were too dark to identify anyone.
Photos might be enough for authorization.
Authorization is good. Authorization would put this operation on the books, which it's currently merely adjacent to. Support from one senior vamp via his child Helena is enough only to stop Gemma getting censured, or worse, for kicking the unliving shit out of her own sire. Authorization means blood, tools, a rubber stamp on the shit kicking, and maybe another vamp to hold him down.
Cool. Get me the address and I'll send you the pictures when I've got him.
Send them now, Gemma.
Call me back when you have what I need. Thanks,
Gem.
Gemma takes about as much pleasure in hanging up on Helena as she does from the motorbike's kick of speed. Viv leaps out of bed in a panic, for the second time in as many days. No handcuffs this time, but a rain of glass shards is no improvement. She hits the ground on all fours, aiming for a sprinter start, but misjudges the landing and skids on an ankle. She makes it less than halfway across the room before it fails her completely and she drops bodily onto the tiled floor. She pushes off on her good ankle as hard as she can, away from any glass that might have made it this far, and rolls at the last second to soften the fall. It's still a bad one, though. Her back and shoulders take the brunt of it. Under her breath, she curses. Curses her fragile body, curses her decision to leave Gemma squat, curses her complacency in not staying awake long enough to surround her bed with improvised weapons. The ankle won't support her. She tests it and it simply fails, threatening to twist farther if she puts any more weight on it. So Viv pushes against the floor with her elbow, borrowing more from her body than it has, and turns over to face her aggressor. The man from the bar, Cooper, Gemma claimed, makes no attempt to chase after her. He's waiting, half in, half out of the broken window, perfectly still, like he's posing for a photographer. Grinning. Smug bastard. There's a decent distance between the two of them, at least. Viv's flat is the kind of place you rent if you're a disabled person on a low income who has to live alone, because living with abled people means navigating around the ship they just drop everywhere, and living with another disabled person means your access needs constantly conflict. There's one main room and a separate kitchen and bathroom and very clear floors. The tiles are a problem, a compromise, easier to clean but worse to fall onto. Viv picked the place with the tiled floor on the assumption that if she really needed to, she could inch from bed to bathroom on hands and knees, but the chances of her successfully vacuuming a carpet were somewhere around nil. She crawls away from Cooper as quickly as she can, but she went down hard on the tile, and it's probably not going to just be her ankle that fails her when she stands.
Little one.
Cooper says, with the same local theatre does Shakespeare voice that Viv remembers from the alley.
Who is your protector?
He pushes off from the window frame and clears the bed without touching it, both feet connecting with the tile at the exact same time. A beyond perfect landing. Fuckers like Gemma. If she's a lost Olympic gymnast, he's right up there contending for the gold. They have to be connected. Viv can suddenly picture what the fight in the alleyway must have been like if Gemma was telling the truth, which apparently she was.
Who is it that keeps you from me?
Cooper declaims.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Viv gasps between the staccato breaths the exertion is pushing out of her. She's close to the kitchen door now. She might be able to leap up, lean on the handle, and throw herself through it in under 2 seconds if she doesn't mind blacking out after.
While I was attempting to elevate you,
he lilts,
I was interrupted.
Elevate me?
I see your pain. I can end it.
Oh, fuck off!
There's an end table to the door by the kitchen, home to Viv's plastic box of cleaning supplies, and within reach as a lever for her good arm. She throws the box at Cooper, hoping the contents will slow him down or distract him for a second, or even get bleach in his eye or something, and shoves herself brutally upright. Moments later, she's in the kitchen, kicking the door closed, supporting herself on the counter, blinking hard. She flexes her calf muscles to keep the blood flowing as her brain threatens to fail on her, gropes blindly for the knife block. Cooper bursts through the door, Viv swings around holding whatever it was she found at belly height. A horrible wet sound, like slicing through cheap supermarket chicken, suggests she found something sharp. Viv doesn't wait for him to react, she pushes against him and the kitchen cabinet and dives through the gap between Cooper and door. Another rough landing, inventory. Ankle useless, shoulder subluxed, severe pain in her spine sufficient to keep her from raising either arm above her head. 100 other problems too numerous and trivial to evaluate in the face of the bastard calmly following her out of the kitchen. She can't take much more of this. She's beaten and the man hasn't even touched her yet. Her hip feels like it might have dislocated. It's not ever done that before and Viv's curious about just how horrible an experience that'll turn out to be. Assuming she survives the next 5 minutes.
Why won't you give me the name of your protector?
Cooper says as he extracts the knife from his stomach and idly cleans it on his sleeve. Viv, out of energy, simply stares at him.
Look!
He says, pulling his shirt up and showing her the wound. It closes.
The pain is over, you see.
He wipes his stomach, smearing the blood like a child chasing ketchup around a plate.
These abilities will be yours. I know how badly you need them.
He takes another step forward and Viv pays a heavy price to crawl another few inches away.
I've watched you, you know. I've seen your pain, your struggle, and your pride.
Keep him talking. Eke out a few more seconds.
What do you mean?
I can give you many gifts. Strength, speed, long life.
He gestures at his healed, bloody belly.
And health, but pride. Pride like yours, it simply cannot be given. It must be learned, earned through hardship. It is your pride that makes you valuable, Vivian. So very, very valuable.
What do you mean? He smiles like a stage magician.
I am of the vampire. I will elevate you, bring you into this life. All I ask in return is your assistance and your love.
Well, there's your answer, idiot. Vampires. Viv, again, curses her stupidity. She should have realised this, should have put two and two together and come up with four, no matter that four is fucking ridiculous. And what about your old girl? Viv asks, remembering something Gemma said. The woman you took before me, what happens to her? Is she even still around? Cooper frowns.
My dear, who have you been talking to?
Viv considers her answer for a second and shows him a finger. It shakes. Cooper's smile returns, wider and more predatory, slicing across his face. Viv can see his canines lengthen. Great. About to be killed by a cliché. Behind her, the front door explodes out of its frame. Gemma takes it all in. Vivian's on the ground, breathing heavily, badly hurt. Cooper's advancing on her, stupid vampire teeth proudly unsheathed. The window over the bed's been smashed. Must have been how he got in. There's blood in the air, but it's not human, not Vivian's, and Cooper wouldn't have cut himself simply breaking a window. Vivian must have managed to stick him somehow. Nice. Cooper frowns at her like he's trying to solve a puzzle, so Gemma responds with her toothiest grin, letting her own fangs slide out. They prick gently at her lower lip. She's always liked the feeling. Vampires, especially the older and more experienced ones, don't like to fight other vamps they haven't encountered before. You don't get to be 100 or even 1,000 years old without a tendency towards caution, and an unknown vampire can be anything from a pushover to a nuisance to a mortal threat. Even a new turn can have strange abilities if they're from the right bloodline, for all that the most magical ones are heavily curated these days. And occasionally something truly unique pops up out of nowhere, some bullshit new vampire magic blossoming from an ex-human's latent talent. The last time that happened, almost every elder vampire in England ended up decapitated, and English vampiredom was forced forever into the shadow of the larger European collectives, all because of some Dutch upstart. Gemma wants to buy her a drink someday. Gemma herself doesn't have any of the more ridiculous vampire powers, but she's pretty strong. Back up, Vivian, she says. Vivian, moving painfully, does so. Gemma winces in sympathy.
I know you.
Vivian, Gemma says, ignoring him and hoping that pisses him off.
You have a car, right?
Yeah.
Keys?
Up there. Vivian, now backed up against Gemma's leg, points with some effort at a small shelf by the front door. Her bag, still dirty with blood and flakes of whitewash, is on top. Gemma keeps half an eye on Cooper, reaches for the bag, checks inside. Keys, painkillers, earbuds, collapsible cane, Vivian's ruined phone and, score, Gemma's iPod, and drops it. Vivian catches it with adrenaline reflexes before it hits the ground. Gemma gives Vivian what she hopes is a reassuring nudge with her leg and steps around her, placing herself between Vivian and Cooper. In the square of Vivian's tiny flat, Cooper stands against the far wall between the foot of the bed and the TV table. Vivian's behind Gemma, closer now to the wreck of the front door than to Cooper, and Gemma stands in the middle. Slowly, deliberately, with as much threat as she can muster, she unsheathes a knife. It's not her biggest, but it has some gratuitous notches on the blade, which, she knows, can be particularly damaging on the way out. She might or might not be able to take Cooper in a straight fight. It's never come up, so intimidation is key. Make him nervous and keep him that way. She licks her fangs, deliberately drawing a little blood from her tongue, lets it trickle onto her lip.
I know you,
he says again. Sure.
She's got to keep the idiot cogs in his brain turning over until Vivian is out of the flat. She'll be safe enough on the street under all those lights. Not even Cooper would be stupid enough to take this outside. Hopefully.
It's you, Gemma.
He doesn't need to air quote her name. The contempt in his voice is enough. Took you a while, old man.
You're dead.
Yeah? Well, you're a fuckwit. Gemma grimaces, 20 years dreaming of confronting this bastard face to face, and suddenly her repartee is shit. No matter, her knives talk better than she does anyway. He steps forward.
I killed you,
he says in the stupid growl some vamp men like to deploy when they're trying to sound like proper movie monsters. It doesn't work on Gemma. She's put down way too many monsters and Cooper doesn't have anything she hasn't seen. She laughs. You fucked it up, didn't you? You didn't stick around to make sure the job was done. She pantomimes slicing off her head with a knife. He growls again. Gemma, professional murderer, adds, amateur. Cooper's not even looking at Vivian anymore. His eyes, his sneer, only for Gemma. Gemma returns his enmity, magnified. She knows what it is to be Vivian right now, to be victimised, played with, by someone so much stronger that resistance is just another part of the game. 20 years ago, he beat Gemma like he beat Vivian. He drained her like he almost drained Vivian. He gave Gemma his poisonous gift and tried to withdraw it with a knife to the belly. And now, here he is, outraged, astonished, blood on his smart little suit. Pathetic.
You freak!
He splutters.
Pervert!
I'm not the one with a cupboard full of women, Gemma snaps. He frowns, and she can practically see him thinking things through. If she's of his bloodline, that means not only is she unauthorized and thus able to be killed without consequences, but there's no way she can have any unexpected abilities. She watches his expression turn triumphant. He assumes his age will give him an advantage. The idiot. She's not what he thinks she is. Sort of a pattern there. And the way he's holding that kitchen knife suggests he never learned how to fight. Probably never even fought another vamp. He might have hundreds of years on her, but he's a lightweight. Deliberately, she does not smile.
So, you're protecting humans?
He sneers.
Going to elevate this one yourself?
Gemma takes a step forward and is gratified to see him take an unconscious step back. Not quite as confident on the inside, perhaps. He's right up against the wall now, cornered, unless he goes through her or makes a break for the broken window. God, I'd almost forgotten how pompous you are. She says, who says elevate? She makes a get out of here gesture behind her back and risks a half look behind her. Vivian is partially back on her feet and almost through the front door. Should be enough. Gemma steps forward again and Cooper's shoulders tense. Come on, she says in her sweetest voice. Come through me. I dare you.
You arrogant.
She buries her knife in his neck before he even thinks to attack, and while he reels, she hits him with the television. It's a big one, heavy and old, like the one her parents had when she was young, with the bulging glass screen that spits static when you touch it. The glass caves in around his head and she pushes it forward, burying him in the wall with a shower of paint and brick dust. She grabs his wrist and hooks a foot around his ankle and pulls, taking his balance from him, dropping him to the floor. She presses the appliance down, taking great satisfaction in the convulsing of his body as the capacitor discharges into his face. It'll take him a minute or two to recover, more time than she needs. Viv keeps her balance until she makes it to the car. The cane slips out from under her trembling arm and she falls once more, striking the car door painfully with her hip and being reminded of just how much damage she's already done to that part of herself. At least she doesn't hit the pavement. That would be very bad. She steadies herself on the car and the cane, digs in her bag for the car keys and drops them. Excellent job, Viv. There's a loud crash from inside the flat. Viv hopes that Gemma came off better from whatever that was. She still doesn't trust her, but of the two of them, Cooper's the one who's thrown her around and deliberately hurt her, while Gemma's merely handcuffed her against her will and fed her unappetizing cereal bars. Still, better to be away from both of them, and for that she needs her keys. She grips the bag strap in her teeth and begins to slowly lower herself to the ground, putting her full body weight on the cane through her left shoulder. Vivian! It's Gemma, running out of the flat, holding a knife, breathing heavily. She's got the arms of her hoodie rolled up and she's soaked to the wrist in blood. She catches Vivian's eye and throws her a shy smile, suddenly for all the world looking as if she's popped round for tea and hasn't just eviscerated a vampire. Vivian manages a wave with her free hand and wonders if the euphoria that sometimes floods her brain when she's in pain is making her make strange decisions, think strange thoughts. "Hi," Vivian says, lightheaded. "This your car?" Gemma says, picking up the keys and holding out an arm. It's dripping blood, a new but apparently constant feature of Viv's life. "Yeah," Viv allows herself to be supported. 6 foot something if she's an inch, Gemma takes her weight with no noticeable effort. She could probably throw her halfway down the street if she wanted to. Just like Cooper had. Viv pushes away. Standing on your own 2 feet is better for the self-esteem anyway, even if her ankle is... Gemma catches her. "Shit," Vivian says. She lets herself be helped into the car and strapped in. Gemma borrows her bag and extracts an apparently endless supply of knives from various concealed sheaths, dropping them into the bag one by one. She keeps the bloodied one. A minute later and they're away, Gemma driving fast and looking very much like someone who doesn't get along with manual gear shifts. Viv wants to reach out and change gears for her, but there's no way she's about to make any movements that aren't absolutely necessary, so she forces herself to relax her shoulders and hopes there aren't any cops around to see them doing 65 in a residential area. Is he following us?
Not without his eyes,
Gemma says through gritted teeth. You cut out his eyes? Which answers the question of how Gemma managed to get gory so quickly.
Fastest way to put him down for a while.
Just for a while?
Hour or two. Eyes are tricky to heal. Did it last night too.
Okay. Good. Disgusting. Where are we going?
I dunno.
Gemma shrugs while maintaining her death grip on the gear shift.
Out of town at least.
Viv watches Gemma in profile as she drives, for want of anything better to do. Distracts from the pain a little, at least. The sharp jawline Viv noted last night is even more striking from this angle. Viv watches it tense and flex as Gemma concentrates. Don't be attracted to the crazy vampire lady, Vivian. She looks ahead instead, hooks her more injured leg under the other one and massages her ankle. She's buzzing with pain, fatigue and nausea. Multiple hard falls with no recovery time will do that. Sensibility is playing hard to get. She needs sleep or possibly a quiet and dignified death.
What's this light on the dash?
Gemma asks, breaking the silence. What light?
It says check engine.
Fuck! Matt said he fixed it.
So what do I do about it?
Ignore it.
It says check engine.
And do you know how to check an engine?
No.
Well then.
It's done this before, I take it?
Normally there's a post-it so you can't see it.
Unbelievable.
Gemma, presumably, can just step out of a rolling car before it wrecks itself and therefore doesn't have to care if she loses control. She makes the turn onto the dual carriageway on 2 wheels. Viv, unable to stand it anymore, pops the question. So, you and Cooper, vampires.
I suppose I can't make you believe we're both on a lot of extremely potent drugs?
No.
Yeah, vampires. For fuck's sake. Sorry.
And you couldn't tell me this before
because I was trying to keep you out of all of this.
Why?
It's dangerous for you to know things.
Oh.
Yeah, but you had to go running off and...
Don't put that on me. I woke up handcuffed to a radiator and found a note that said, please don't scream. It was extremely like being kidnapped. Wouldn't you have escaped first chance you got?
I suppose.
You do still look a lot like a kidnapper, actually.
You want to go back to your flat?
Absolutely not.
How did you get out of the cuffs anyway?
I'm hypermobile. Sometimes it's helpful, mostly it's awful.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I'm in danger?
From Cooper, from my boss's bosses, from the general nature of my life, yeah.
Fantastic. Sorry, I have to ask, how is a human in my position not supposed to guess the whole vampire thing?
There's not supposed to be any humans in your position. Hunting humans is illegal. That's why I've been following the fucker for so long. He's messing with their system.
Their system? It's not your system too? Not really. What does that mean? Conscientious objector? Gemma growls. Can we talk about this later? That was my second fight in 2 days. I might have electrocuted myself a little. I've not had anything like enough to drink, and I'm very thirsty right now.
Viv, seeing white knuckles, nods. They drive in silence. Viv flickers in and out of consciousness. Gemma, after a while, almost completely stops breathing. It doesn't seem to affect her driving, which is still terrifying. An hour later, sufficiently remote, Gemma pulls the car into a Travel Lodge car park and throws herself out of the driver's side door. Doesn't even pull the handbrake or turn off the engine. When Viv looks up from shutting down the car, the only sign of Gemma is the door to reception closing as she slips inside the hotel. Probably better that way. Viv extends her cane and slowly, carefully, climbs out of the car. Nearly slips on the gravel, but catches herself. When she's sure she's ready, she hauls her bag up onto her shoulder and takes the path to reception one step at a time. Some help would be nice, but there's no way Viv can hide how much she needs it, and she doesn't want to look like too much of a cripple in front of the vampire.